Hello, and welcome to another episode of MotoGPOD, the podcast about motorcycle road racing. Today is Friday, September 2nd, 2005. I'm Bob Hayes, your host. Thank you very much for downloading the podcast. I got a big show today. I have a whole bunch of listener email that I want to pass on and talk about. Plus, I'll do a race report on the 125cc race at Brno from last weekend, and I got a few other cool items to touch on. Before we do that, I do want to extend my sympathies and condolences and prayers and thoughts to everyone that was affected by the Hurricane Katrina. That was a monster, and I know that there's at least a couple of MotoGPOD listeners that won't hear this episode for quite a while, until they get their lives back in order with electricity and the internet and all of that kind of stuff. It's been a really monumental disaster, and I hope that all of those people in the area get their lives back on track as soon as possible, and that we can rebuild as much as we can of all that. And it's really a big problem. And there's lots of ways that you can help if you're so inclined. Probably the easiest thing to do is make a donation to the Red Cross. I saw there was a donation link on the front page of Google, so if you just go to google.com, you can make a donation, that sort of thing. That would be really a good thing to do if you can't help in some other way. Okay, on a lighter note, tickets for the 2006 U.S. Grand Prix at Laguna Seca went on sale yesterday at 8 a.m. Pacific time. I went online at 8:45 and grabbed my tickets, and stuff was already selling out, a lot of stuff. A lot of the different options that you can get have been on sale already to people that had those same kind of tickets than last year or this year, 2005, like the suites and the premier camping and so forth, and that's all long gone. The paddock passes are gone now as of Thursday evening. I managed to get some in the morning, but they're gone now. A lot of stuff is going fast. So if you hurry, get online there at www.laguna-seca.com. You should be able to get general admission tickets and grandstand seating maybe. But certainly don't wait too long. Even general admission will sell out soon, I'll bet. And then you're stuck with the scalpers and things like that. A few other things here. Steve Jones sent me a really cool Excel spreadsheet that will convert the race weekend time schedule for MotoGP to your local time zone so that you know when to get up in the middle of the night if you want to watch the race on MotoGP.com and see the live timing and all that good stuff. He actually sent it to me before the Czech GP, and like a dummy, I didn't mention it on the podcast. Sorry about that. It was linked in the show notes, and I see that several people found it there, but it would have been a good idea to talk in the podcast about it. So, sorry, Steve. In any case, he's improved this spreadsheet, and he's made it really nice looking, and he's going to update it for all the races throughout the season. So, before each race, you can download the latest version so you know the schedule for that weekend that's coming up. And I'll put a link on the MotoGPOD website, and all you have to do is just kind of keep checking back to Steve's website there for updates before each race weekend. The short version of the website address, in case you're listening to this or you don't have access to a computer or something real quick, in case you remember, is stevejones.cc/MotoGP. stevejones.cc/MotoGP. And he says if people find it useful, he'll continue to update it as the season winds on. Well, I'm pretty sure that people will find it useful. It was kind of neat. So, Steve, thank you very much for doing that. It's a pretty handy little item, and I hope that a lot of you guys find that useful. Okay, I ran across a thread on the rideon2.com internet forum that was really kind of fun, too. I don't want to give away the whole thing, because I think you should go onto the site and check it out for yourself. But it boils down to this conspiracy theory sort of thing about Sete Gibernau's last turn of the last lap retirement at Brno last weekend, where it's some sort of fuel delivery problem. Ran out of fuel, electronic failure, whatever it was. Well, in any case, all may not be as it seems. So if you go to the rideon2.com forum, which two spelled out, T-W-O, rideon2, you can see how it's a good story. And it's like all good conspiracy theories. There's enough to it that you're kind of like, no way, that can't be. Or can it? And I think you should take a look. It's fun stuff. I'll put a direct link on the MotoGPOD website, or if you can find it, if you want, on the Rideon2 forum in a thread called Did Sete Leave in a Huffmobile? And I promise it's not the Grassy Knoll story rehashed. Further on, a listener named Phil sent me a cool link that you might want to check out. This full length is ridiculously long, so I'm going to put that on the show notes on the MotoGPOD website. But the short version is revs.tv, R-E-V-S, revs, like revolutions.tv. And it's a partially free, sort of partially paid website where you can watch all kinds of really cool racing on your computer. You need a big fat internet connection, of course, for something like this. But if you're listening to this podcast, you probably already have a decent internet connection. And they have like some of the Isle of Man stuff on there and all, just a whole bunch of other stuff. So check that one out. Thank you very much for that link, Phil. I appreciate it. I didn't say your last name because you didn't send it. So I'm not sure if that was intentional or not, but in any case, thanks, Phil. World Superbike is racing this weekend at Assen in the Netherlands. This weekend's races will be the last world championship event to be held on the legendary 6-kilometer circuit before the bulldozers move in to shorten the northern loop section of the track, making way for a new hotel and entertainment complex. Progress. But it'll still be a good track, but it will definitely have lost some of its sort of character, I think. But I'm not one of these guys that's going to say, oh, well, that was not the real Assen. You know, it's still going to be a good circuit to go to or to watch the races at. And then other items in the news that I normally might devote a full podcast segment to include Honda introducing a new improved version of their RC211V MotoGP bike and scads of silly season rumors and even some fact, including one rumor that says that Gibernau might be going to Ducati next year. I got so many good emails this week that I really didn't want to talk about stuff like that that you can just find on crash.net and so many other news sites. I'd rather talk about stuff that, you know, people are emailing me that you're not going to see anywhere else. So this show, we're going to concentrate on a lot of that because, like I said, I got just a ton of them. And also, I couldn't get press releases for those items, and I don't want to just sort of steal other people's other sites' content. So check out crash.net for that. And once again, I'll put a link in the show notes for all of that, so you can check it out up there. I found out what happened to Morawaki at Brno. I guess they weren't actually supposed to be there after all. MotoGPOD listener Yoshi Uchiyama from Japan gave me the straight news on that. He sent me an email among some other stuff we exchanged. And in one of them he says, I looked back at the MotoGP web news and the one that said Naoki Matsuda with Morawaki would enter Japan's GP, not at Brno. This announcement was made before Brno, and that probably confused you. Actually, Naoki was at Sugo last Sunday for the Japanese Superbike race on Morawaki. He came in 10th. So, thank you very much for that, Yoshi. I appreciate it. I'm not sure. I must have just completely misread the story, because I thought they were supposed to be coming to Brno, and I sort of assumed it was like a warm-up so that they could do as well as possible at the home race in Suzuka. But we'll see him, Motegi. We'll see Morawaki racing at Motegi on the next race later this month. Alert MotoGPOD listener and a close personal friend of mine, Chris Gerlitz, had jury duty this past week, and he emailed me some interesting comments. He writes, among other things, I had about 5 jurors asking me about my MotoGPOD shirt on Thursday, which is kind of cool, Chris, thanks. At lunchtime, we were sitting around and talking about racing. Usually we read, and lunch feels like it's 5 hours long. This time it flew by. We were even asked to pay attention when we went through the metal detectors because we were all still talking. He says, I think there's a lot of fans out there, but they don't know how to express their love of the sport. The marketing people need to step up or the wave could pass them. That's why it takes some sports, like soccer, 3 or 4 chances to catch on. They're going to miss the boat in the U.S., and then it's going to be harder for American fans. Good for your podcast, bad for the industry in general. If Speed Channel doesn't expand, it might wither away. And, you know, Chris, I mean, you're exactly right. You hit the nail on the head. I've said it before, and I'll say it again. If you're a fan of motorcycle road racing, you need to convince other people to watch it. And, I mean, you'd be surprised how many people end up liking it if you just get them to watch it. It's fantastic racing. Any race fan should enjoy it. I really don't understand how people don't. It's like, what's not to like? And the average Joe Blow on the street doesn't even know it exists. Because it's just not covered in the major media. And I've said this before. Sorry to keep going on about it. This is my soapbox. But for a nation like the United States that thinks that racing equals NASCAR, motorcycle racing really should be popular. And believe me, I'm not saying there that NASCAR is as good as motorcycle racing or something like that. Don't get me wrong. But look at the reasons why people say they like NASCAR. You know what the NASCAR fans' main arguments about why they like NASCAR and why they don't like Formula One, right? There was no passing in Formula One. Well, there's plenty of passing in MotoGP last time I looked, or how that there are no American Americans racing that they can root for. Well, MotoGP, four Americans this year. Or, you know, I love the way the NASCARs are, drivers aren't afraid to rub fenders and trade a little paint and all that kind of thing. So the answer to that is, how many times have this year have you seen two motorcycles going around a corner, mashing into each other over and over again? And this one is my personal favorite. How about when they say that in F1, it's all about technology and sissy paddle shifting, and that the drivers don't even really know how to drive, and pusillanimous chicanes and all this other nonsense. Again, MotoGP is the answer. There's no push-button gear shifting there. Admittedly, they do still have the pusillanimous chicanes, but they're much less... With the motorcycle, you got multiple lines going into it, so it's not nearly the same effect that you have on the car in the Formula One. So make these guys watch a race. Just hold them down, pull back their eyelids if you have to, but if they still say after that that it's just, you know, fur and crap, well, you know, they're a hopeless case, and I don't know what to tell you that you should say to them. But a lot of them like it, and they're amazed at the guts of the riders and the action of the racing on the track. So if Speed TV won't promote road racing, then we're just going to have to do it. That's all there is to it. At least that's what I think in any case. I would call these little rants and editorials and things, you know, something clever like my take, but I guess some other guy that talks about racing sometimes is already using that term, so we won't have a funny name for it. Speaking of NASCAR and that sort of 800-pound gorilla-style influence that it has here in the States, I was exchanging some emails with Francesco Ardia from Italy this past week, and we got to talking a little bit about coverage of MotoGP in Italy, and where the sport is just huge. And Francesco had this to say. He says, okay, well, MotoGP sources here. Well, yes, there are quite a few, from broadcast TV, newspapers, and so on. But obviously it's because of one reason, really, Valentino Rossi. Everyone in the last few years has become a moto racing expert because of him. There are times when MotoGP races are viewed on TV by more people than a football match, or soccer, he means, which is like the national sport here. So, go figure. Rossi is a phenomenon here, and one out of three kids on the street has a t-shirt with a 46 or valet's face printed on it. I think it has its good side and its bad side that the racing is now so popular here. Good is that so many people are genuinely attracted to it. Bad is that so many others become sudden experts on the subject, and even on TV, and they do such a piss-poor job. It's so bad, on some Italian forums there are huge complaints about how incompetent people are allowed to comment on motor racing as if they were real experts. Anyways, another good thing is that very often Rossi goes and comments on the 125 and 250 races in the Italian TV booth, which is really good, because you hear a pilot, a talent, a champion commenting about his own sport, about a different race, but on a circuit on which he will race on a few hours. So that is really great. And I agree, Francesco, that would be really, really great. Here for the AMA, we'll get past racers in the commentary booth, and of course they do that on Superbike as well. James Hayden's doing it this year. Our MotoGP coverage is, we have different announcers than the Eurosport guys, so we don't typically get racers in the booth here, but every now and then they'll bring someone in. They had somebody at Donington, which I can't remember who it was. But to hear Rossi doing it would be really, really pretty special. But the points that Francesco makes about some of the problems that MotoGP is facing by being too big in Italy are really valid for NASCAR over here. They run the risk of driving off their core fan base in a situation like this just through, you know, overexposure and turning the whole sport into more of a circus or a giant soap opera. That's the big problem, when it's more about, you know, who is the racer dating or, you know, crap like that. Formula One's the same way in parts of the world. It's just too big for its own good. And here in the U.S., most TV viewers across the country could literally see television shows with, you know, two or three guys talking about NASCAR every single day of the week for several hours a day. It's just going on and on and on about, you know, 30-odd cars driving in a circle. I mean, I couldn't take that much coverage about something that's really good, like, you know, MotoGP. It's just overkill. So, you know, get a life. Find something else to do. So hopefully MotoGP doesn't shoot itself in the foot in Italy with the Rossi Fumi the way I think the NASCAR is over here in the States. MotoGP OD listener, it was also an alert MotoGP OD listener, by the way, Derek Jones forwarded me an email that he got from the California Superbike School in the UK there, in which Andy Ibbett, the school's director, writes about touring the new Istanbul circuit with the 125cc rider Thomas Luthi during the Formula 1 GP that was there a couple weeks ago. I like the whole email a lot, so I contacted Andy and asked if it was okay to use on the podcast, and he very nicely gave me his okay. And here's what Andy wrote. He says, "Talking Turkey with Thomas. A weekend at the F1 GP in Turkey gave Thomas and I the opportunity to walk the new track before he races there in October. And what a walk it was, too. The circuit is a combination of Le Mans and Mugello with fast turns and really late entry turns. Watching the Formula 1 cars pulling 4 Gs through some of them will give you an idea of just how fast we're talking about. Walking around the circuit at the end of Saturday's racing, Thomas and I drew up a map of the corners and what points we would use to help him have the edge over the other 125cc riders come October. Looking at cambers, where the F1 cars had created bumps, slippery sections where the cars had bottomed out, what curbs were possible to use and those that were not, and we have ended up with a comprehensive opening guide for him to refine once he rides there. Most interesting is the 4 apex turn, currently known as Turn 8. The first 3 sections are quite straightforward, but lead you into going too fast in the final part, so a later turning point and a good quick turn looks like the key to this. In the slower turns, again, they have very late apexes, so it will require late turning points. Thomas is developing well, as we agreed on just about every plan we had for each corner, with him leading the debates that we had. By the end of the lap, we then just wanted to jump into a taxi and get back to the hotel, but we had more walking to do. Because of the really high security, no taxis were allowed near the track, so the nearest taxi point was a staggering 30 kilometers away. That's 18 miles. We must have walked 4 kilometers when we came across some of the security who flagged down a bus and got us to the taxi point, and we were very grateful for that, as it was now very cold and dark, and we had seen the snipers on the way in, and we were wondering if they just needed some target practice. Still, we are now forearmed for October. We must say thank you to Sauber, who helped us by arranging a lap in the medical car, gave us a detailed circuit map, and fed and watered us. It seems that the whole F1 paddock watches the bike racing, as everybody wanted to talk with Thomas as we walked around. Excellent." So, I thought that was kind of interesting. Thank you, Andy. And it makes you wonder how many of the other riders in MotoGP took advantage of the Formula 1 race weekend to go and check out the circuit. The place, I would hope the place was swarming with them, but, you know, who knows. I guess we'll find out who was paying attention and who wasn't come October 23rd when MotoGP races at this new circuit. And it's going to be a good one. I think it'll be a great weekend, in fact, not just good, judging from what I saw in the Formula 1 coverage. It's one of the new style tracks that are getting built, so it's very wide. It also has a lot of elevation changes and some very interesting corners, especially that Turn 8 that Andy was talking about with its 4 apexes, or apexes, or whatever. That turn caused a lot of guys in Formula 1 big problems, so it'll be one, and it will be really interesting to watch how the MotoGP riders do at this track. Like I said, MotoGP goes to Turkey on October 23rd, 1 week after Phillip Island in Australia. So, of course, MotoGP OD will bring you a race preview and a full report, so listen for that. And if you want to get on the list so that Andy can send you these cool emails like this, go to the UK site for the California Superbike School. That seems a bit like a oxymoron, the UK side of the California Superbike School, but there it is. You can find it at superbikeschool.co.uk. Superbike School, all one word, .co.uk. And again, of course, I'll put a link to it in the show notes on MotoGPOD.com. And when you go to the SuperbikeSchool.com or .co.uk website, you'll find a link for the mailing list on the left side of the page. And just sign up, follow directions, you can't go wrong. In his email, Andy uses some of the terms for techniques that they teach at the school, like hip flick and attack angle. But, you know, you can figure out what he's talking about from the context, and they're really interesting reading. And if you ever get a chance to go to the Superbike School, jump at it. They teach a lot of great stuff there. It's Keith Code School that teaches you the exact skills of cornering a motorcycle. It's pretty much anybody can ride fast in a straight line, but you really have to know what you're doing and have some skill and preferably some training and practice to take a corner at a good speed. And it's not just for racers, but a lot of the racers have gone there to this school, including apparently Thomas Luthi. Keith Code is the author of Twist of the Wrist, which you may have heard of, and he started the school more than 20 years ago. I think it was the first of its kind, and they have locations in the United States, the UK, and Australia, and school dates various places all over the world. And if you sign up for a course, tell them that you heard about the school on MotoGPOD. I'm sure they'd love to hear that. That'd be kind of cool. Yet another alert MotoGPOD listener and a RideOn2.com regular, PopMonkey. He sent me an interesting email that I want to talk about here a little bit. PopMonkey also started that thread, by the way, on the RideOn2 forums that I mentioned earlier about Sete. So check it out. In any case, his email gives away the 125cc race, so which has not yet been broadcast here in the United States. So if you want to not spoil the race, if you're going to watch it on TV or whatever, you guess you should stop listening. But PopMonkey has some really good points in here, and chances are you already know who the results are anyways by now if you look at any of the racing websites, so I might as well just keep listening. It's good stuff. And first of all, I'm going to give you the official race report press release from Dorna, which is for the 125cc race at Brno on August 28th. So, once again, if you don't want to hear the results, this is your last chance. We're going to start spoiling it. Luthi consolidates championship lead with Czech victory. Okay, a little time out there. I hate headlines like that. It drives me crazy. Because you can't help but sort of see these headlines, even though you're not trying to find the story somewhere or another. Somebody will send you an email or something. You don't have this damn headline in it. You haven't seen the race and you know what. But okay, sorry. Luthi consolidates championship lead with Czech victory. Thomas Luthi claimed the second GP win of his career today at the Brno Circuit, extending his championship lead over title rival Mika Kallio to 8 points. Having qualified on pole, the Swiss youngster grabbed the hole shot and quickly built up a gap at the beginning of the race before being caught by the chasing pack. A five-rider-strong leading group quickly formed, Luthi being closely followed by Mattia Pessini, Mika Kallio, Lorenzo Zanetti, and Marco Simoncelli. Pessini, Kallio, and Luthi exchanged the lead several times, but the elite GP Honda rider, who had never scored a single point on his three previous visits at Brno, was eventually back at the front on the 17th lap. Light rain made the conditions tricky for the riders in the late stages of the race, and Pessini crashed out on the penultimate lap after moving back into third position behind Kallio. While Luthi was able to escape his rivals, Simoncelli and Kallio staged an intense tussle for second position, but the Finn eventually held off the challenge of the Aprilia rider on the last lap. Spaniard Sergio Gadea took an impressive fourth after a strong charge from 20th on the grid. Italian rookie Lorenzo Zanetti produced an excellent performance to take the checkered flag in fifth position ahead of Fabrizio Lai and Mike Di Meglio. Manuel Poggioli was eighth in what is his 100th Grand Prix appearance. It's getting pretty old there among Manuel, especially one twice. KTM riders Gabor Tomacci and, I'm sure I massacred that name, Tomacci, and Julian Simon completed the top 10. Okay, cool race report. Maybe I should just read those verbatim from now on instead of writing my own. Or rewriting the official one. But I like rewriting them. Gives them sort of a personal touch, don't you think? Okay, now for PopMonkey's email. He sent me this with a little warning about the spoiler, which, so you can tell it's a pet peeve of mine, which I thought was pretty cool. Thank you, PopMonkey. Appreciate that. He says, "Hey man, did you watch the 125cc race? I thought it was really bad race direction that caused Mattia Pessini to crash. I've never seen a situation where more than one rider raises their hand due to rain and the race is not stopped. Well, never except for Brno in the 2004 250cc race. What's the deal there? I thought Pessini was robbed, and I'm not even a fan of his. I was rooting for Simoncelli, and Pessini's crash helped him out. On a related topic, what are your thoughts on the 125cc, 250cc classes subjected to different rules than MotoGP, specifically the rain rules? I think that the FIM should apply the same rules to all the GB classes except in regards to mechanical rules such as displacement, wheel sizes, etc. And related to that topic, nothing irks me more than the fact that the 125 and 250 classes are not coming to Laguna Seca next year again. I totally don't understand it. It's unfair to the riders and real fans of world-class racing. I guess we'll get more carts or perhaps a friggin' monster truck, so that would just be perfect." I agree sort of there, PopMonkey. Thank you for the email. You got a lot of good points in there. I haven't truly watched, you know, from beginning to end, that entire 125cc race. Just haven't had time. I checked out the highlights, watched that. I had the race playing in the background when I was at work, you know, from MotoGP.com on a separate computer, and just listening to the commentary by good old Nick Harris and Matthew Roberts, and occasionally sort of paying attention when they got excited, which meant I was paying attention a lot. And it was a good race. I know that much. 40 riders on the grid. You often get a big grid on the 125s. And the half and half sort of wet, dry conditions that they had going on made for a really tough time for the riders. Pessini crashed out of third place right before the start-finish line on that second to the last lap. I mean, the guy had just, you know, one lap and a bit to go. After he and at least two other riders had signaled that it was raining, you know, more than once. race direction had a couple of laps where they could have called it. They really should have called it. And the riders started signaling on that, at least the third to the last lap. I'm thinking that race direction probably thought that they could hang on to finish the race and, you know, just sort of suck it up. Maybe that it wasn't raining that bad, and, you know, that sort of thing. Sometimes it'll be raining on one side of the circuit more than another. It was a little surprising that they didn't call it, though, because they normally follow the rider signals in a situation like that, especially when you have multiple riders saying that it's raining. But was Pacini really robbed? I'm sure he would say that, but Luthi, Callio, Simoncelli, and Gadea were all in that lead group, and they were all riding equally hard, and they didn't crash out. So maybe Pacini just pushed a little harder than the conditions were allowing, and the other guys were just better judges of what they could get away with. I don't know. I'll admit, you know, maybe they probably should have called the race, though. And then about what I think of the rain rules, well, I think this year's rules suck. Let me tell you about those rain rules real quick for anyone who isn't familiar with them. For a 125 or a 250 race that starts out as a dry race, but is later on declared a wet race, race direction will red flag it, and then they'll either have a restart to finish the, you know, the remaining laps, or they declare a winner as of the last completed lap. And I'm pretty sure it's 2/3 of the race distance is that cutoff point, but it might be 3/4 in order for the race to be called complete. The regulations that I downloaded from the FIM a while ago say that it's 2/3, but I've heard the announcers say 3/4. So either the announcers are wrong, which, you know, no, say it ain't so, or I'm looking at an outdated set of rules. They are the 2005 rules, but there's all kinds of addendums and stuff like that, so I may have missed something. But in any case, 2/3, 3/4, whatever. So if it's that much complete, the race is called based on the last completed lap. It does get a little bit complicated of exactly what they mean by the last completed lap, with several paragraphs going on in there. But they would call it. And if it's less than 2/3 complete, but more than 5 laps, then they show the red flag and the riders pit, and then they change tires and so forth, and it's appropriate. And then they have a second start with, you know, a second race, basically, enough laps to go the distance for the full race distance. There's no aggregate times or any of that kind of BS. So if the leader was way out in front when the race was red flagged, he doesn't get some kind of automatic gigantic advantage on the restart, which is definitely, this is the way it should be. No aggregates. I hate aggregates. Nobody wants to do a bunch of math to figure out if the race leader really is the race leader, or if he's, you know, actually a few seconds behind the real race leader and that kind of thing, like you have to do in an aggregate race. But then the MotoGP class operates under a different set of rules that came into effect this year. The races are never stopped for rain. If the race starts out dry and is later declared wet, they'll display a white flag, which is a new flag this year for MotoGP. And American race fans will know a white flag means last lap. It doesn't mean that in MotoGP, and they don't typically use that in, well, they don't use it in Formula One either, so it must be an American thing. But once that white flag is shown, the riders can pit and switch machines. I believe they can also change tires on the same machine. I'm not 100% sure, but it would be much quicker to switch machines, provided that the second motorcycle has a different type of tire. So, you know, if they're running on slicks, they have to go to intermediates or wets. If they're running on intermediates, they have to go to wets or slicks, that kind of thing. The rule is new this year, and I kind of, frankly, I think it's kind of silly. But the main reason that they did it, I think, is because there was an incident, I can't remember if it was last year or the year before, where it started raining slightly in a dry race. Actually started raining pretty good in a dry race. And there was a rider in second position. Let's call him Valentino. And he passed for the lead, and immediately after crossing the start-finish line, raised his hand to stop the race. And at that time, it was sort of up to the race leader, the way the rules were written. I didn't read the rules, so I was just going off what the announcer said. But it seemed like as soon as the race leader raises his hand, that's it. Race direction's calling the race. And so if I recall directly, race direction was, you know, more or less obligated to follow that race leader's signals or something like that. And that's just a system that seems open to obvious huge abuse. And there was some sort of chatter about that particular incident, and if anybody remembers any of the details, because it's, I don't really remember it all that well, I should look back in the season guides and see if I can find something, but that's probably why they changed it, plus the fact that they want the MotoGP races to go the full distance, which I think is mostly for television's sake, and with the 125s and the 250s, they want them to stay on time, so once again, for television's sake, so, you know, they don't want a restart of a long race, and, you know, when they're almost done, it's like, no, we gotta stay on the time schedule, we're done. But personally, I think that they should all run under the same rules that they currently use for the 125s and the 250s, where race direction says, okay, you know, red flag the race, and we'll either have a restart or not. But either way, all the classes should have the same rain rules, whichever set they're going to use. It's just kind of a confusing mess right now. And if anybody else has any input in this, I'd love to hear it. You know, send us an email, motogpod@motogpod.com. And about your last part of your email, Pop Monkey, where you're talking about the support classes at Laguna Seca, and that's a tough one. I would really love to watch the 125s and the 250s at Laguna Seca. I really would. Those guys race hard, and it's generally very close racing. But I also want to see the AMA guys. I think that part of the reason they did it this way is because the Laguna Seca can only run a certain number of unrestricted noise races every year. I think it's four, might be six. But whatever, it's only a few that they can race. And this is because a bunch of whiny rich people came in and they bought houses right next to a racetrack. And then they complained about some noise, which, you know, should set off a few alarm bells right off the bat. And so then the government stepped in and said that the racetrack has to be kind of quietish most of the year. And I mean, I'm thinking, you know, you were the one who bought a house near a racetrack. And yeah, suck it up. Maybe ask for some free tickets or something. I don't know. It's like the people that buy a house near the airport and then, you know, complain about airplanes. Duh. So, whatever. If Laguna Seca can only run a certain number of unrestricted noise events, and they really want to keep the AMA, which I'm sure they do, then they're either going to have to cut a car race to have a second giant motorcycle weekend, or somehow shoehorn in the AMA races into the MotoGP. And the smaller classes, the 125s and 250s, just are not as popular over here in the States because there's no large-scale series in America that covers those types of motorcycles. AMA got rid of their 250s not too long ago, and they were never covered sufficiently anyway, and at least not for a very long time. And it's kind of a shame, too, because it's also that's that sort of growth track in Europe. You know, this is how you get to MotoGP. You start on the 125s, you go to the 250s, MotoGP. Whereas, you know, here in the States, guys start, you know, when they do start racing motorcycles, if nothing else, they often start on dirt track, which we've seen Kenny Roberts and Nick Hayden and all these guys that have that sliding style because they started dirt tracks. But otherwise, they start on street bikes, 600s, and go up to the 1000s or that sort of progression. And it's really not quite the same. You know, a GP bike is quite different. So they should have the 125s and the 250s. And then the car races, the main reason for the car races, I think, was Wayne Rainey. The guy does, after all, have a turn named after him at Laguna Seca. And it was a way that he'd be able to go out and race, and all the fans would be able to go and see him, and all the other old guys would be there, Eddie Lawson and all that. And you know, it's all well and good, and that's really, really kind of a cool thing and lots of fun. First GP in America, let's get these old guys back here. But unfortunately, it didn't work out that way because old Wayne was burned on his legs right before the race weekend and couldn't race because he was injured. Which, by the way, anybody who doesn't know, Wayne Rainey's in a wheelchair, so that's why it would have been carts and not, say, motorcycles of some kind. It was still kind of neat, but I have to admit, I didn't really watch the karting that closely. It is cool, but it's, you know, they're shifter carts. You know, they're fun. But we use that time to kind of get around the track and do other stuff. What I would like to see, what my perfect race weekend at Laguna Seca would be, you know, within reason, beyond the absolute perfect weekend of let's have MotoGP and World Superbikes and AMA and something silly. But my perfect race weekend would be skipping the carts, have all three MotoGP classes running, 125s, 250s, and MotoGP series, then have two of the AMA classes with the others taking a break in their schedule. So, of course, it would have to be the two AMA classes would be Superbike and Super Sport. And then you'd have five different races in five different series. And that's one less race than they have now with the four AMA classes plus MotoGP plus karts. So they'd have plenty of time to run all these races and get enough practice in and all that other good stuff. And that's what I'd like to see. But it's not going to be that way. So I will enjoy what I get. I bought my tickets. I'll be there with some friends, my family. It's going to be a good time. Can't wait. So it's still a long ways off. It's almost 10 months, but you're never too early to start planning. So thanks very much for that email, Pop Monkey. I enjoyed it a lot. I hope that other people did too. Alrighty then, that's going to do it for today. It was a pretty long show. I hope you enjoyed it. It was a lot of fun to focus so much on reader emails instead of, you know, just stuff I'm collecting off the internet. So keep those coming into me. And, you know, we won't do it every time. Sometimes we'll do the news thing. We'll do the race reports. Sometimes we'll do reader emails. The address is, if you do want to send an email in, send it to motogpod@motogpod.com. And I'm going to a trade show in Amsterdam for work next week. That's kind of cool. You get to go to Amsterdam, but it is work, unfortunately. So there won't be an episode of MotoGP this coming up Friday, which is, September 9th. But we'll be back with a vengeance on the following Friday, September 16th, if all goes well. And until then, just, keep the rubber side down, and don't forget World Superbike this coming up weekend, which, of course, is just a few days early. I'm just barely going to miss it. By me going to Amsterdam and them in Assen, you know, would have been a little bit of a drive away, but, you know, it's a lot closer than California or Oregon, right? Damn it. But in any event, thank you very much for listening. Appreciate it. And we're signing off. Talk to you later. MotoGP is a trademark of Dorner Sports SL. The MotoGPOD podcast and MotoGPOD.com are not affiliated with Dorner Sports SL. All other trademarks are the property of their respective owners. MotoGPOD isn't affiliated with any of them.